Okay. I'm gonna keep this short and sweet. Yeah, so, this is not a talk. This is me telling Andreas and whoever else is interested, hopefully the people who showed up, about a... I'll use the word compelling because I'm gonna sell my work, but you can decide for yourself. It is a completely reasonable model for the 700 GeV-XS within the context of a supersymmetric extension of the Standard Model that has been pretty well studied, and that's even come up a lot in this workshop. So basically what I'm gonna do is I'm just gonna tell you a couple of correlations, basically the couple of things we calculated, how they relate to each other, how they relate to the diphoton excess. I'll scribble a mass spectrum up on the board, and we can talk about if there's any other observables. But so the premise is that we need... So what do you need to do the 700, to accommodate the 700 GeV-XS? You need a... I'm gonna use a scalar, actually pseudo, and it's neutral. And then you need some higher dimension operator for production. And similarly for K to gamma gamma. So this will be glue glue. So this is the dumbest thing. This is, I think, certainly for every theorist, probably for every experimentalist who thought even for a moment about what might be going on. I know we had this conversation when we heard the rumor. It's like, well, this is the first thing we wrote down. Just a toy model. And so what I wanna do is I wanna take this basic structure that again appeared on every blackboard. And I wanna dress it up with some perhaps better motivated particles. So let me tell you a couple of things about these loops, in case, for those of you who haven't thought about them. One fact that'll be interesting for the interpretation in the context... So I should say this is Dirac Aginos. I think I didn't say that yet. So, there's gonna be tension between getting a big enough signal and maintaining the Dirac-ness of the spectrum. So let me tell you where that tension's gonna come from, and then, maybe I can quickly remind you why we like Dirac Aginos. So if you just consider the basic structure of these loops, these are fermions, right? So a Yukawa interaction flips helicity. So these arrows are helicity arrows. And gauge bosons don't. So if you follow them around, the only way to close the loop is to have a mass insertion. Okay? So on both sides, we're gonna have this same structure. This, by the way, is how you can see that these operators roughly go like a loop factor and one over mass times phi, well, let me call it what we call it, A sub B, F mu nu, F mu nu. So naively, you'd say, well, you can see it from the dimensional analysis, but basically, there's factors of mass in the numerator from this mass insertion that compensate. That's how you get linear mass in the denominator, right? Because otherwise you might think, oh, well, I only have propagators, and so... But that's at least one way to think about why it goes like 1 over m in the operator. So, the tension comes... Well, let me write them all. So we have the MSSM plus Dirac partners. Basically, in the MSSM, we all know the Gaginos are Majorana. So for example, the mass that we're used to thinking about is something like this, right? Usually over two. It's a Majorana mass that connects the Gluino to itself. The Gluino is an octet, which is, and so you can contract that with itself. You don't need a conjugate particle to get a gauge invariant operator here. And what the Dirac, so basically, Dirac Aginos you need to introduce two extra degrees of freedom. We call them O, so there's going to be some Dirac mass, MD, which couples the Gluino to something I'll call O, which is an octet fermion. Of course, it has to come as a superfield, and it turns out that the way this works is that it comes as a chiral superfield. So it's not another gauge boson, right? You get a fermion from a chiral superfield and a corresponding scalar. The scalar is not going to play any role in the talk, although it certainly would eventually be a feature of the model if this were what was actually going on. So if we didn't have this mass, we would have only Dirac mass, and that would be the pure Dirac limit. But the problem, well, I guess I have to tell you one more thing. So, and then I have a Majorana mass for the octet, which I can in principle write down too. The superpotential is going to be the following. So we have more Baroque names for these things in the paper, but so it's S00 is going to couple. Sorry, I'm being a little scattered. But so this is the case for the Gluino. We of course need a Wino version and a Beano version.
Can you discuss supersymmetry breaking?
I'm going to be...
The M3 is obviously supersymmetry breaking.
Yes, this is also supersymmetry breaking.
Okay.
So the way you get...
What about the last one?
This is going to be in the superpotential.
Okay.
Yeah, good. So that's a point worth making. These come from Suzy breaking, but this is going to be an F-term Suzy breaking. This comes from a D-term Suzy breaking. And this is in the superpotential. So Suzy preserving. So in principle, the source, you know, normally in the simplest cases, right, we think about having one source of Suzy breaking in a model, all descending from the same thing, giving roughly the same scale to everyone. So there's definitely something, some model building that in principle would need to be done to understand where these two different sources are coming from, how they're linked together. That's not something we worried about at all. We're just trying to do a phenomenological study. But again, if this stuck around, this is one of the more interesting things from a theory point of view to think about. So this is, of course, AQ and HD, the standard guys. We added this operator just because it's gauge invariant, and we can, and we're looking at the parameter space. So we thought it made sense to just look at things generally. So the partner here is going to be T, and the partner here we'll call S. So we have O, an octet, the partner for the Gluino. We have T, which is a triplet, the partner for the Wino. And we have the singlet, which is a partner for the
Wino. Those are gauge things. Those are from gauge multiplets. So.
No, no. So these are the extra states we need to marry the fermion and the gauge multiplet.
That's what you mean.
Yeah, that's what
I mean. Okay.
So I'm going to have a W with a tilde and a T with a tilde.
Gotcha.
Those marry together to give me the Dirac particle. But I'm also going to need these Majorana masses for the reason I'll say in a second. And so, so let me just write the rest. What am I missing? And then plus, there are masses for all of these. So there's M sub S squared plus M sub T squared plus M sub O squared. There's also S cubed, but that plays no role, so I'll leave it off. And I think that's the full set. There's a linear term for S also. I'm going to ignore it. It doesn't play any real role in the story. So this is the basic model. right? These are in the superpotential, but it tells you couplings between scalars and fermions, right? So you pick one scalar, two fermions for everyone. And so these are the couplings that show up here and here. Okay. And the pseudoscalar
is hiding inside S.
The pseudoscalar is hiding inside S, yeah. So we're calling the pseudoscalar A sub B. It's the pseudoscalar part of the Beano partner. So that's why it gets A sub B. So now I can dress this up for you. So this is this A sub B. So S includes, if you like, some scalar sub B plus I A sub B. This is going to be the octet fermion, and this is going to be the triplet fermion. So the majority of the literature, or some huge fraction of it at least, does effectively this. They add these particles without an underlying reason, which is perfectly reasonable, but normally they put vector-like quarks, so that's one difference, and actually that buys us something. The octet gives us a bigger coupling to gluons. So for free, we sort of have a particle that's doing a little more heavy lifting for us. But now you can see this tension between being in the Dirac limit and having Majorana masses, because if this were the Dirac mass, that would take us from O to G. And then we would wrap G around again, and we couldn't use this coupling. We don't have a coupling between the singlet. There is no gauge invariant coupling, or supersymmetric coupling, I guess.
Excuse me? Yeah. Is there any term in the superpotential like THUHD?
Good. There is THUHD that also essentially plays no role. We actually checked that if that's too big, it actually affects the mass spectrum of the chargenos and neutralinos.
Yes.
In a way that dilutes the excess just because of the way it splits things, but we're not really relying on it, so we kept it order 0.5 or 0.3 in our scans.
And Tim, I'm a little confused by something you said. The problem with vector-like quarks is not the color representation. It's really that the ENM representation relative to the color representation needs.
Yeah, good, thanks.
But
yeah.
Here it seems to go in the wrong direction, right? You have a larger color representation, and presumably, you know, the Wienos are not that large of an electromagnetic representation, but okay.
Yeah, so we're going to have relatively large couplings, order 1 couplings, but one of the plots that I'll sketch is where the lambda pole is, and it's sufficiently far away. The order 1 numbers that go into the RGs just work out so that we can run to pretty high scales. So
just one quick question. In this setup, the natural branching ratio of gamma-gamma is roughly alpha over alpha s. Is that correct?
It's worse because
there's some color factors that are making it worse.
Yeah, and there's competition with all of the different electroweak gauge boson final states. So for pure triplets, I have these numbers actually. For pure triplets, it turns out that the ratio of WW to gamma gamma, just in the partial width, is a factor of 30.
So what's the gamma-gamma branching ratio at the end of the day, typically?
Good. So it's 2 times 10 to the minus 2 in one of these benchmarks. It's a few times 10 to the minus 2 in all our benchmarks.
A few percent at best.
Yeah. The glue ranges from 40% to 20%. And then the rest is made up by either... Well, I'm getting ahead of myself, but the rest is made up by other electroweak final states and also some chargino neutralino final states.
But you listed that by really dialing the couplings, right?
Yeah, so...
But are there tree-level chargino neutralinos? Well, you haven't talked
about that.
So
this, for example, gives you a tree-level decay into chargenos and neutralinos in principle, depending on the spectrum, as does this.
Can't somehow make the masses large enough?
Yeah, so...
neutralinos.
So what we find is that, as we've been discussing, right, there's tension between getting a large enough branching to photons.
Uh-huh.
And so basically the gluinos can be, you know, 2-ish TeV, 1.52 TeV, and with a coupling of order 1. And get everything right, the whatever is dominating this loop is close to 400 J.
So could you explain the tension again? I didn't quite
So and maybe I should have started by reminding you why we like Dirac, but let's just for a moment assume we like the Dirac limit. If we only used the Dirac mass here, then we couldn't close the loop. Because we don't have a coupling octet Luino singlet. So that tells us that this has to be the Majorana mass, which couples the octet to itself, right, through this superpotential Majorana mass. And so this is just one of the things that we had to explore numerically is how close can you be to the Dirac limit where, now, if you like, this is rough, but this is going to go like the Majorana mass over the Dirac mass squared. Okay, so you lose if you're in the pure Dirac limit where the Dirac mass is much bigger than the Majorana mass from the point of view of wanting the benefits of Dirac A genomes. But then there's the tension with getting the loop again.
So I thought it had something to do with the decay as well, but it's really just the production.
No, so the spectrum does have, and again, this is, so you do need basically the only, if you're, neutralino is dominated by the electroweak states, so you do have decays AB, zeta, chi0. If this is dominated by the same states that have these big couplings, then this just totally swamps the branching ratios to everything else. So one of the games you have to play with the spectrum is you want a spectrum where the charginos who are doing this are at 400, which is roughly half the mass, and these neutralinos are mostly the singlet, so that you can sort of have a small coupling here that's small enough so that it doesn't dominate the branching ratio. But this is the way that we're going to get observable signatures in the chargino neutralinos at the end of the day, because if I just have a pure triplet running in the loop, then, as we've discussed a lot in this workshop, right, the natural mass splitting between the charged and the neutral components there is very small. At 400 GeV, that's tough, if not impossible. So
by the way, if the chi0 is only slightly off-shell, you will get some non-negligible rate in the decay.
Yes.
The same way with WW. Higgs, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I guess you presumably work that out numerically. Did you allow for the three-body decays?
Well, but those three-body decays are going to always go through an electroweak boson too, right? So you're thinking something like this, and then or this would probably be kind of wonderful.
Yeah, well, something like that. Well, you're saying that.
So this isn't on shell. It's
that's
really
not on shell.
So I think we're okay in neglecting
okay.
those.
Yeah, I guess so.
Let's see. Good. So maybe I can tell you the three.
But what is the LSP in this story?
It's mostly singlet. Either it's mostly singlet, so there are kind of two scenarios you can imagine.
Uh-huh. But singlet being... Because we have...
The fermion of the Beano partner.
Right, but now you have to assume something about the other, the Linos and Beanos from the ordinary... From the gauge guys.
Yes, that's right.
And what's their masses and how much mixing there is into the, this system.
Yeah, so we take all that into account. From the point of view of the story, those masses those masses only, the only, I think you said it, the only thing that's going to change about the rate is that having those masses might dilute how much triplet is in the Charginos running in this loop. So, I mean, that's included. I can,
But taking the decay across the light guys, then...
Oh, yeah, we're definitely assuming they're all heavier than 400.
Okay.
And really, yeah, so maybe because this might be the most interesting thing, I would say there are two basic scenarios that work. One is a spectrum of chi 1 plus at 400, and then chi 1 0. So this is actually chi 1 plus, and roughly chi 2 0 comes along for the ride. Because if, say, this is mostly pure triplet, then they're going to be relatively degenerate. And then chi 1 0 is down at like 200. This number is chosen purely for phenomenological reasons. If this were massless, then you guys would have seen these 400 GeV neutralinos already. So we're already playing a little bit of game here, right? Working in a somewhat compressed region to avoid those bounds. And
so the neutralinos you have there are the same. These are the same. No, it's the the Chagino and the neutralino two. These are not the same as. These are not the MSSM ones. These are the.
No, these are these T's. These are these triplet partners.
But the production of those is the same as the electric production in
the
MSSM?
It's the same as WeKnows, because they have the same quantum numbers as WeKnows. Yeah. So these are roughly triplet. This is roughly singlet. So WeKnow partner and BeKnow partner. And so this is, I think, the most optimistic scenario from the point of view of being able to see, to actually see the neutral states running that are running in the loop. There is a more pessimistic scenario where you just have this multiplet at 400 GeV. And this is the lightest neutralino. And then you would only see these three cascades, right? It would be very hard to see these directly. So I don't think that would be, at least short-term, the first sign of SUSY that would show up.
Let's see, the normal WeKnows and BeKnows, they seem to be heavier, or what?
Yeah, let me see where we put them in the benchmarks here.
750 or half of 750.
Yeah, roughly at a TeV. Mm-hmm. Because this is really the whole story.
Triplet, aren't you hosed by Z gamma?
You mean limits on Z gamma or the branch ratio?
Limits on Z
gamma. I didn't think so.
13 TV is about 20 femto of Lorentz. If it's a triplet, I presume there's a large Z gamma over gamma gamma branching ratio.
So.
It's gotta be at least 5.
It is, it's 5 or 6 in some of these benchmarks, yeah.
So if you hit the signal at 5 femtobarn, you're excluded by the gamma?
Yeah, so we're at 4.
There is a branching ratio of before you see it, right?
Yeah, is that's that's including the branching ratio?
20 femtobarn to Z gamma. It's 20, 25-ish at Atlas, 30 at CMS. They both had downward fluctuations of 750.
Really?
At 13 TeV.
13 TeV.
This is
a common.
This is
a gamma. But this is Z gamma with after branching ratios have been already taken into account.
I thought that was just the pure Z gamma rate.
If it's inclusive, then I would think of 1 in 20 acceptance times efficiency would get you down to like 1 event there. Am I doing it on that front?
Yeah, I thought we checked this, but it'd be great to get it right before we put out the paper. So. It'll end up being borderline for some of these numerical values if it is a factor of 20.
I think in round one the limit was about 10 times less Z gamma compared to gamma gamma.
Yeah, the limit's about eyeballing Atlas. It's about 25-30 femto just to Z gamma. Not with leptons. The axis says dp to x, br x to Z gamma, femto.
So this is assuming that they're not hiding something from you.
Assuming they're not hiding something from you?
You know, when they say Z gamma.
I think that would be
because that's not what they're searching for.
Of course, but they try to back it up. They know the branch.
They have to go backwards.
Yes, but that's a reasonable thing to do, and it's most often done. So yeah, I think there's some stress from
it. No, definitely. I think it's going to be borderline for the numbers in this table.
Okay, but you're saying you're sort of lowballing your cross section for sigma br to gamma gamma.
Yeah. So according to Matt Buckley's fits, which I don't know if anyone else has done them. He gets 3.8 is his best fit at 750.
Sorry, but he's just using the December, using the binned information from the collaborations doing his combination.
Right? Yeah, he has the update. I mean, he did an update for Morion.
I think the problem is that number is lower than either of the collaborations individually. Right.
Oh, but it includes 8TV.
But does he include the 8TV updates for both collaborations?
I thought he did that in the blog.
Okay.
Which we are citing.
You're citing a blog in your paper?
Oh, that hurts.
But, I mean, yeah, the error bars. So, I mean, these benchmarks we have, like, between 3 and 4 femtobarns. Sigma times branch ratio for gamma gamma. But we can go. I mean, we can go higher than that. Those are just the numerics.
Okay. Yeah. Anyway, so I would say ZQ.
Yeah. No. That's great. I appreciate that comment. I think we looked early and then lost track of that. Okay. So I'm about to hit my half hour, which I swore was the limit of how long I was gonna bore you guys with this. Maybe I can sketch. So there's a couple, like I said, there's a couple of calculations that we did besides this, which I think are interesting and kind of complete the story.
So going back to the tension, how on DRAC at the end of the day?
So, good. So the we have to be, we basically can't be Dirac-like for the triplets. Or for the triplets, or the, you know, for whatever's running in this loop, it's not Dirac.
Also the other loop.
The other loop, we can be Dirac-ish, so we can have so our Majorana mass is of order a TeV, which is really what you care about. So maybe I should just say, right, and we have kind of said this, but I'll say it again. The two things we like about Dirac are, if there are only Dirac masses for the Gaginos, then the way the Dirac the way the Gagino mass feeds into the scalar masses comes as a finite correction, so there's no logarithmic enhancements. So in principle, you could have a more natural, you could find the same Gluino mass, and it would be more natural than you might have naively thought from the MSSM, because there would be no logarithmic enhancement to the contribution to the scalars. So that's one reason we like Dirac. The other reason is, so that's called super soft. So there's super soft. And that was first proposed by Ann Nelson, and then with Neil Weiner and Patty Fox. And then Graham Cribbs, with Adam Martin, noticed what they called super safe, which is, super is a strong word here, but it's a play off super soft. Which is basically just to say that one of the dominant production channels for the squarks with lightish gluinos is proportional to the diagram only exists if there's a Majorana mass for the gluino. It's kind of along the same lines of the mass insertion argument you can make here. So if you only have the Dirac mass, then your squark production is suppressed. So they did cross-section calculations and so on, but basically the idea is that in these Dirac models, the limits might be slightly weaker just because the production channels changed it. So those are two nice features, but as I said, there's tension here. And so what we find is, the trade-off is, of course, that as you crank up this coupling, you can afford to have smaller masses, but at some point you turn up this coupling so much that the theory is non-perturbative. And so so that's one of the things that we're able to compute since we're in a complete model, is we can ask what is the scale, given the input couplings in this superpotential here, what is the scale where things break down? And so to answer your question, Howie, so I don't know, in these benchmark points, we have masses, where is it? So there's, for example, a probably the most optimistic point from the point of view of naturalness has a gluino mass, an M3 parameter at a TeV, right below a TeV, and the Dirac mass at 1.5. So that gives you some sense of and the actual gluino in that case.
Well, could you put M3 to 0 and still be happy?
Oh, but then, so the problem ends up being that if you want to avoid the bounds from the LHC and also have this mass be large enough to generate gamma-gamma for you, then you really want the one who is more of the gluino to be the heavier. So, so if you turned off the Majorana gluino mass, then your spectrum would look like you would have the gluino and then the octet, right? So they share a mass through the Dirac mass, but then you would also need to turn on this octet mass to get this diagram turned on, and so then if you impose the bounds from the LHC, especially given that you have two gluinos, you're going to need to push them both up, right? So from the point of view of getting a large enough rate and avoiding the bounds, what you want is the octet to be the lighter guy and the gluino to be the heavier guy, but that's the wrong limit for naturalness. So that's a source of tension. So here's one fun result. So this is,
where's the scalar partner of A sub B sitting at?
Yeah, so we put all those guys in a couple of TeV just to get them out of the way. We haven't thought, I mean, for our purposes, they don't play a role.
But you're doing that by adding supersymmetry breaking.
Yeah, just a terms. Just a soft mass.
Willy-nilly, so to speak.
That's right.
That's right.
All right. So we're really just trying to study the parameter space of these couple of particles.
Suppose that scalar were mass degenerate with A. Mm-hmm. Would that help? Would that hurt?
Good. So, the reason we chose A, I guess I didn't say this,
yes.
Is because S is going to mix with the Higgs. And so you're going to have a big rate to T bar. So,
because of, is it through that?
Yeah, I mean, it happens, for example, through this.
Why doesn't A mix with the CPR?
It does, but.
And that couples to T bar.
Yeah, so that's something that we estimate. Our point of view is that the mixing with the Higgs we know is at 125, right? I mean, this is relatively standard point of view, I'd say. But the Higgs is at 125, and we don't know where the A0 is. So we estimate if the A0 were at a TeV, the CPR Higgs, then what's the mixing constraint on the mixing we would need to avoid having a huge decay rate to TeV bar? So we just include that also in the numerics. It's not in the table. But roughly speaking, we have a percent level rate to TT bar, I think.
You percent level to TT bar, there's quite a lot of gluon gluon. Right.
So the total cross section. is...
Tipping is up to 40% at one stage.
Yeah, so the total cross-section is on the order of 100 fathom.
The limits are very bad.
Yeah, we looked at this also. I think we're...
I think you're safe.
I think we're safe there. So I think I think this is just a general comment about the gamma-gamma resonance, is that, in the original CERN paper, for example, they took a few limits, but if you're using a loop, if you're just naively generating a loop-induced production through gluons, then I think the TT bar is always safely below the bounds. If you're going to have a width that's dominated by this and then have enough rate to gamma gamma.
Could you adjust that lambda h to 0? I mean, is there any particular reason other than you can to write SHUHD?
Not a particular reason, no. It does give us, well, so the plot I was going to draw here is it helps us with the Higgs mass.
The Higgs mass. Mm-hmm.
So, right, because it's NMSSM-like. So, you can compute. We have two contours here. So this is roughly... this is like 1. This is around 0.5. 0.5 is like there. This is tan beta of 5. And I can just show you these plots too if you really want to see them in detail. But basically, for two different choices of the stop mass, these are the lines that give us the right Higgs mass. So these tell us that, these are for stops of 800 JeV. And these are four stops of 400 JeV, where you have to play games with compression to avoid limits.
So is this lambda SHH the same as lambda H?
Yeah, sorry. Yes, thanks. So this is just, you're very familiar with this, of course. This is just the NMSSM coupling. So what we did, we actually include one loop corrections and threshold corrections from all this stuff, and
So of course, for that value of the coupling, I guess the thing goes non-contributive as well before the depth scale. Right?
Yes. So that is the next plot I was going to sketch. So we also looked at that. So, for example, if we set this octet coupling between the Beano partner and octet to 0.6, then we get contours that look something like this. This is log base 10 of the scale where the couplings are non-perturbative. So 10 to the 18, 10 to the 14, 10 to the 10. And this crosses at 1. And here it's 0.5. And here, which one did I draw? 14. It's like a little below 0.7. It's like 0.65.
Tell us what these axes are. Right?
Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you. Lambda SHH. And this is lambda STT. So these are the two couplings that are most relevant, right, for getting, I erased the diagram, but for getting potentially the large decay to diphotons, the charginos. And so we claim that you need to be essentially below this line if you're going to have the 800 GeV stops. So essentially there's an upper bound just from the Higgs mass if you include the stops. And this is the sort of least that the stops can do. So this is with zero ray terms and so on. But just the familiar one-loop diagrams that Howie computed a long time ago. And then, so basically you this motivates being in the triplet limit.
Having some amount of this coupling to fix the Higgs mass, but really driving the gamma-gamma excess in the triplet limit. But in principle, you could be, you know, anywhere below this line, and if you're willing to...
But that line depends on the tangent vector, right?
Good. So that line was this asymptotic.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks.
Yeah, I should have said that. So at the end of the day, let's see, and then, right, and then the last thing we compute is the gamma-gamma rate. So at the end of the day, basically what we find are regions of parameter space that have all these features we've been discussing. So there's the, maybe to summarize, because I'm now 15 minutes past what I promised, there's the tension with, so we like Dirac Agenos from the point of view of naturalness, perhaps, but then there's the tension with needing large Majorana masses to get the gamma-gamma rate high. There's an additional possible tension with trading that between having large couplings, but then that doesn't get you all the way to the gut scale. And but one nice thing is that the model, in principle, gives you a way to accommodate the Higgs mass and the familiar guise of the NMSSM. So, and then, as I said, I think the couple of more maybe interesting things from the point of view of a spectrum are just that Chargino, some set of Charginos is going to be essentially as light as it can be, but not below half the mass. And there are going to be two Gluinos. The preference is for them to be as light as possible, again, to enhance the rates. But there is parameter space where, you know, the lightest one could be 3 TeV if you're willing to tolerate, I didn't draw the contours, but if you're willing to tolerate a cutoff for your theory at, you know, say 100 TeV or 1,000 TeV, which is reasonable from a low energy point of view.
Do you have a table with branch fractions for specific cases?
Yeah.
For example, tau. Do you have a tau in here?
Oh, I don't have it in this table. So you want to know the 750 GeV decayed at tau. So I think that would also go through. It'll go through the same mixing, so we could estimate it. So I can tell you.
Oh, okay. Right.
Right. So it basically inherits the branching fractions from the A0. Mm-hmm. Which is also a function of tan beta. So, yeah, it's not...
Yeah, trouble is...
It would take me... I mean, it'd be trivial. It would take me a second. We could just figure out what the branching to tops was and then scale it.
So the way you set this up, you seem to... Am I right or wrong in that you prefer to be lower values of tan beta rather than higher, or...?
He's got Higgs mass contours over there, so...
Yeah, so...
I don't see a big difference.
There's not a huge difference. I mean, it's basically... the claim is that if you want to explain the Higgs mass, again, this is, of course, dependent on the stop mass.
Yes.
And the A, right? But let's say you're not getting a big contribution from the stops, then this SHH coupling can range from 0.4-ish to, really it doesn't have actually that wide a range as a function of tan beta. This is what I was asking, we had this conversation the other day about whether or not you're including these loop corrections from lambda.
Right.
This is why I asked you, because we realized that they were important. So I can show you the actual plot. We have one, if you don't include the loop corrections, then the tan beta dependence is such that it turns off the NMSSM coupling, as is well known, right? It's the MH goes like lambda mh squared is like lambda squared v squared sine 2 beta squared. This has been said a few times during the workshop. So the naive thing is that this turns off as you go to large tan beta.
Right.
But as it turns out, the loop corrections proportional to this coupling have a different tan beta dependence. And so if you're interested in large couplings like we were to try to explain this excess, then they're large enough that those loop corrections can be important. And so that's why we have still a non-zero contribution of the Higgs mass at large tan beta, whereas from just the tree level result, you would think it turned off. So I can show you the plot. It does what you expect, roughly.
What is it just?
Roughly goes like that without one loop.
So what's the tan beta dependence for the loop? Sorry, I'm just out of curiosity.
There's a bunch of terms. So, but there's some. It's like sine to the fourth beta. There's some sine squared beta, cosine squared beta. There's basically box diagrams with HU and HD in the singlet. So you can do.
These are usually threshold corrections. You're saying that this, you actually get the logs this way as well.
Yeah, so you get logs of the splittings of the singlet scalar to singlet fermion show up in these loops. When you work them on.
Right, but there are no color factors or anything else. So these are all electroweak logs.
Well, or proportional to lambda, which we take large. And that's why it matters. And it didn't matter for you.
I see.
Yeah, that was the whole thing. Yeah. Right. So we were cranking up couplings. I mean, and that's why we care about the lambda poles too, right? That's why we bothered to do this, is because we're cranking up the couplings. So, we wanted to at least do the leading order check to make sure that we're not going non-perturbative essentially immediately. There are some nice features about, so when you have triplets, the Casimir's bigger for the gauge contribution, and that makes the running a little slower. So that's one of the if you're used to looking at NMSSM couplings, right? So basically, the running of this coupling is a little slower than the running of this coupling, because this is doublets in the loops, and this is triplets in the loops. And it comes with a minus sign, because it's gauge. So there are some nice, these are all order one numerical things, but there are some nice little features like that. They keep you from blowing up immediately when you're trying to explain things. So at the end of the day, what we'll have is, our money plot, which is the reason the paper's not out, because it takes a while to run. Basically, we'll have regions which are, at least according to Matt Buckley, so we should talk about that a little more. We may want to update them, but regions which are one sigma low, right in within one sigma and can go high. We plot them in this plane, so you can see a correlation, as you would expect. So basically, I can sketch it. So roughly speaking, now this is becoming a mess. A region up here with big couplings, you can, in principle, overproduce the excess, not by much, but by, within a factor of two or so. And then there's some band in the middle where you're within one sigma is the best you can do. And then there's some band here where the best you can do is one sigma low. And so you're trading, it's just the obvious statements, you're trading large couplings, which get you a large rate, for low scale land apples. And so the claim, at least, is that there's some parameter space where you can get really close to the Planck scale. But if you don't care about that, maybe you don't, then there's plenty of parameter space where your cutoff is 100 TeV. And then, the hope would be that you would see this kind of thing with, one, maybe even two gluinos. And the nice thing, something I haven't thought about yet, but if the excess sticks around, it's another thing on the short to-do list to think about carefully, is now you have two gluinos, but they're this mixture of Majorana and Dirac, and so their production is going to be a little bit changed. There's going to be associated production, so there's some fun collider stuff probably there, if they're both within reach. But
so for the actual creature, if it is real, if we've created the A sub B,
it decays to the gamma gamma, and that's at a rate that we can see, obviously, but we set up like that. The Z gamma, you think, is just below the experimental limit?
Yeah, and maybe even we haven't been careful enough, and some of our points are ruled out by that. And
I think the certainty is 30 femtobarns, certainty V analysis. So what did you say was, would you...
So we said 4. And so why don't I, actually, you'd be interested in these numbers. So let me tell you just...
Because this is where you go and look for confirmation.
Absolutely, yes. So...
so the production cross-section is 100 femtobarns, is that right?
Yeah, let's call it that, on that order. So these are just nice benchmark numbers anyway. I mean, whether or not it's this model, if you have a doublet in the loop or a triplet in the loop. So these are pretty close. The WW to gamma gamma.
You don't just give the Brunschick fraction.
Well, but that depends on what the size of the glue is.
Oh, so there's some other amount of gluons.
Yes. Okay. And in principle, these other states, so whether or not you had the light neutralino mode open.
Yeah.
So that's why, let me give you these ratios, and then I can give you some other numbers, too, if you're interested. But these are robust predictions, just if you have a doublet in the loop, right, then you can just calculate. WW to gamma gamma is about 9. ZZ to gamma gamma.
Again, these are with no branching ratios.
Yeah, this is partial width, WW to partial width gamma. ZZ to gamma is 3. And Z gamma to gamma gamma is 0.7. And for the triplet, this number is about 30. This number is about 9. Sorry. And this number is about 6.
This is completely safe.
Well, the 6 is going to be tricky.
The 6 is a borderline. This is what Nathaniel knew.
Because you say it's 30.
It's 30 in each collaboration of 13 dB, so.
Yeah, so.
When we're talking about doublet triplet here, that's for the...
That doesn't make 15
noise. Yeah, yeah, so this is in the model. This is if you're in a pure Higgs-Zeno limit.
If you're going to fit both of the signalization.
I agree with you. Yeah, so this what I mean here is this is if the Charginos running in a loop were pure Higgs-Zeno, you'd get these ratios. If they were pure triplet, you'd get these.
And what's in the doublet case? What is the maximum cross section that you can still fit the cross section?
Yeah. So I
gamma cross section.
So we have a benchmark with here that does. In this particular set of numbers, we get a 3.5 sigma times branching ratio to gamma gamma in femtobarns, which is a little low, but probably okay. We get a, and that's in the Higgs-Zeno limit. The NMSSM-like coupling is 0.7. The coupling to the octets is 0.6. The Landau pole is at the gut scale.
What exactly is the Higgs-Zeno limit in terms of the model you've written up there?
Oh, if you like, you could just turn off this coupling. That would be one way to get there.
So how do the Higgs-Zenos in the loop are from the first term, Ben?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. And then there's a strong correlation with the Higgs mass. So the thing that we do that the NMSSM can't, although trivially it could, right, is we have these octets and we have this octet coupling.
So I guess that would be another reason if it's looking like the triplet model will be ruled out before the double model.
Yeah.
That may be one reason to keep the SHUHD term.
That's not why we did it, but yeah, that would be that would be another reason. Yeah, we were hoping there would be a firm prediction, but of course, as you mix between them, you can change. So, I have another mixed branching ratio where. This has 10, 3, and 1. So, I mean, it's not that mixed, but you can get the sense, right? There's some game you can play where you can go a little bit between.
And yeah. And then these numbers, okay, so then.
Just for fun, your TT bar again and again, which of course seems to be highly model dependent. What sort of numbers are we getting?
Yeah, so they're in these final rates. They're in the full width, but I don't have the numbers in this table. So I could back them out. I just have to do a minute of algebra because we have the numbers in the draft. But it's highly, basically we state it as if the A were here and the mixing were less than this, then TT bar is.
You're fine because the TT bar one, the limit is like 100 femtobars.
That's
it. So it would be the whole cross section. And the digit limit is like 300 femtobars, so you can see the Google right.
Yeah, we are.
Digit limit's way worse than femtobars. Yes, picobars, 5 picobars, and number like that.
Oh, no, it's 3 picobars.
3 picobars, yeah. Divided by acceptance. Yes.
Yeah.
So the TT bar one is.
Sorry, TT bar, you can't. TT bar suffers from the same problem if you don't know what it is.
The interference, yeah. Yes. But even without the interferences, actually, it's 0.8 picobars or so. It's huge.
It's 200, not from run one, I think you have to look into the Higgs noise, which you don't have out yet. But it's 200, plus 251 for a
TT bar.
No, for, sorry, no. Not TT bar, WW.
WW.
It's still okay.
Yeah.
But even for the triplet case, it's probably
the most. Unless you have these lower representations, so the ratios are bad.
Yeah, thanks for...
Thank you.
No, I was... Absolutely.